Session number 8230.
Lydia Rathbone, tape two. You were saying about your trenches when you were on Green Hill. Is there anything you can tell me about them?
I don't think so. They were just the ordinary trenches with sandbags in front, you know, dugouts.
Were they deep?
Oh, yes. There was a fire step you stood on for a field of fire. If you stepped off the fire step, you were protected.
Did you have
I can remember one of our servants accompanied me saying, "We haven't room to swing a cat round, sir."
This would have been your first experience of trench warfare, though, would it
not? Oh, entirely, yes.
Yes. What did it consist of, trench warfare? What were you doing?
Well, you have a sentry. Every, whatever it is, I've really rather forgotten. It would work out as about every 20 yards, I suppose. Who was on duty for so long, and then he was relieved, another sentry. So you always had a sentry, day and night, I think. Then in about dawn, there was stand two, which meant the everybody got to be awake and alert. And of course, I did mention casually in my memoirs night patrolling, but I didn't elaborate on it. We did quite a lot of that.
Well, perhaps you would elaborate now. We'd be very interested to hear about night patrolling.
Well, I would take out, either with another officer or all by myself, say four or five men, and we'd advance towards the Turkish trenches at night. There were many corpses and rifles. I used to collect rifles from the corpses until I was told they were really not wanted. And listening to find out if the Turks were doing likewise. I never came across a Turk on a night patrol. My most interesting one was, quite a short time before the evacuation, after we'd taken over the 2nd Mounted Division's trenches on the right. And we were much closer to the Turkish trenches there, less than 100 yards. And I took out a good bomber, a couple of riflemen, and I said, "We're going to get as close to the Turkish trenches as we can, and I want you to throw as many bombs as you can into them when we get back." Well, we got fairly near. I said, "Carry on now with the bomb." So there were loud crashes, you see. It was too dark to see whether they'd actually got into the Turkish trench. I hope they did. And they promptly opened fire. I said, "Righto, that's enough, we'll get back." So we didn't run, but we lost no time in getting back to the trench. That was the most exciting patrol I had.
Was there much use of barbed wire in the trenches on the peninsula?
Oh, yes, there was. Yes, we had both that concertina wire and barbed wire.
Where did that go?
In front of the front line trench. With places where you could get through.
What was the activity you experienced when you first went into the front line? Was anything much happening?
Well, the Turks used to fire. And as I was saying, Lord Tullibardine came in the morning and politely asked leave to pot at Turks from our better ground, you see, higher up. And he brought an orderly with him, who had been a deer stalker on this estate, I imagine, with a marvellous rifle with telescopic sights. And we said, "Certainly, carry on." We'd spend a happy hour potting at Turks. Well, you ask what the duties were. Well, you had to inspect your men. There were foot inspections, rifle inspections. I hadn't mentioned that there were regular bombardments of the Turkish lines, sometimes by the 15-inch guns of the fleet. I also watched them, shells exploding on the high ground Turkish trenches. I said, how can anything possibly live there after that? And of course they equally bombarded us. They hadn't got such heavy stuff though.
Is that right? Your weaponry was heavier than the Turks?
Well, they had nothing corresponding to our 15-inch guns in the fleet, Queen Elizabeth.
Was that a regular bombardment from the Navy?
I don't know whether it was absolutely regular in the sense of being routine at the same time every day. No, but most days there would be bombardment.
You were saying about your sort of daily routine, about the inspections of the men.
Well, I can't tell you much more about that, because that has got rather hazy.
But was it a situation of stalemate while you were in the
trenches? Yes, absolutely. There were no offensive operations of any kind at Suvla after the 27th of August, which was the final battle, which was a failure.
Did you see anything of that? Oh, you were in September, weren't you? You arrived in...
I didn't arrive till the 6th of September.
Yeah.
Having missed all the heavy fighting.
Were you sad about that?
Yes.
The fact there were no operations?
Yes, I was.
Did you feel there ought to have been more?
Ah, now, as I say in my memoirs, we were wondering what was going to happen. This would be late in November. They thought of the last offensive operation of any consequence, or at the end of August. What is going to happen now? Here we have five British divisions at Suvla, the Australians and New Zealanders at Anzac, and I forget how many divisions at Helles. Must do something. Are they going to evacuate? If there are going to be further operations, there'll obviously have to be a completely new plan and heavy reinforcements. Will that happen or shall we be evacuated?
So you felt quite frustrated, did you, with the inaction?
I wouldn't say frustrated exactly, because there was a good fellowship and happy in the battalion, you know.
Was morale good on Gallipoli when you were there?
I would say so, yes. But then my experience was very limited. I don't know what it was like at Helles or Anzac.
What were the losses like while you were in the front line? You know, were there losses? Did people, you know, many troops lose their lives through sniping?
Oh, I had... A few were wounded. I don't remember anybody being killed at the time. I had a very narrow escape myself once. I was wearing a Burberry, and there were two holes in the sleeve there and the coat here. The bullets had gone between my arm and my side. And we had the usual wastage from sickness, of course. Yes, we had some wounds from the bombardments.
What was the medical care like if you had wounded?
Well, the first thing was your regimental medical officer. If it was beyond him, there was a field ambulance on the beach. I spent a week there with jaundice. And we complained to the Turks that they'd fired on a field ambulance. The reply was, if you will insist on putting your field ambulances so near your batteries, what do you expect? If it was anything worse than that, you were evacuated. Night after night, we used to see the lights of one or two hospital ships in the bay. And that meant you'd go to Was there much hospital activity at Lemnos? I can't remember. I think you went to Alexandria, unless it was serious enough case for you to go home.
Was there a great deal of illness because of dysentery?
And yes, there was indeed. Dysentery was an absolute curse. No wonder with this fly business. Masses of flies cutting on immediately under a spot of jam. And everything is horrible.
How about your sanitary conditions? You know, how did you fare for things like latrines?
Well, latrines were dug and kept sanitary. Earth, so on.
How about
that was very strictly looked after.
How did you react yourself to the sight of wounded men and dead bodies? After all, you were a very young boy, and this must have been your first experience.
Never seeing any dead bodies at Suvla. I did in Mesopotamia. I can't remember that it upset me violently or anything. I just sort of took it as, well, this is war, and there you are.
Talking about the sort of sanitary conditions, how about the availability of water for washing? Could the men keep themselves clean?
Well, water was pretty severely rationed. I forget how much, but you got so much which had to do for cooking, washing and drinking. I remember I used to manage to have a reasonable wash every morning.
How much attention did you pay to things like spit and polish in the trenches?
Oh, insisting on everybody shaving and being as clean as possible and keeping their equipment clean, and particularly rifles, of course. Quite a lot of it. You can't let things slide in war. Morale will very soon sink.
How about the problem of lice? You mentioned your amusing story colonial. Did you all have lice?
Pretty well all, yes.
Was that dreadful?
If it was bad, it was rather. I never had more than 3 or 4. I don't know why. But that was very nasty business.
If you mentioned the flies and the lice, were there any other pests in the hot weather that you had to contend with?
Not that I can remember. The flies and the lice were quite enough.
What method of transportation was there on the peninsula?
Mules.
Just mules?
Pack mules. We had one or two wagons, but they were no use except very locally around Alibaba.
And other systems of communications, you know, if you wanted to communicate, say, with the ship, did you have to do this bodily, you know, by sending personnel over, or could you signal?
Oh, you could signal. In fact, I think they used the old-fashioned semaphore a bit. Then, of course, there were telephone lines in the trenches, field telephoned.
Would not the Turks have picked up the semaphore, as their trenches were so near to yours?
I better not be too dogmatic about semaphore. I can't really remember.
But you definitely had the telephone.
You could signal by torch, too. Morse code, you say.
Was there any use made of very lights?
Oh, yes.
What was that? What did you use those for?
Well, one night, for example, there was an alarm. Somebody thought the Turks were attacking, so he sent up a very light to see. Turned out to be a false alarm. I can't remember any other occasion we used very lights. I suppose we must have done, but I can't quite pinpoint the occasion.
What were living conditions like for you? You know, did you have a comfortable place to sleep in your dugout?
Well, you slept on your valise, you see. That was the idea. And if you had a reasonable bit of ground to put your valise on, it was quite comfortable.
Did you have a batman looking after you?
Oh, yes. Private Small. He was the man who carried my valise up when I first disembarked. I used to offer him Turkish cigarettes. He said, sooner ever would mine, sir.
Was there a lot of smoking in the trenches, do you
think? Oh, yes. Practically everybody would have a cigarette behind his ear unless there was a parade or something. It was just about the time when one switched over. Before that war, it was simply not done to smoke a gasper who smoked Turkish or Egyptian cigarettes, you see. During that war, that completely changed. By the end of the war, nearly everybody was smoking Virginia.
Was there any use of gas on the peninsula?
No.
Did you see any use at all?
No. I don't think we even had gas masks. No, we didn't.
How about your rations? How did you fare for rations?
Well, not awfully well. There was the famous biscuit, which was exceedingly hard and tasteless. Very seldom bread. And I must tell you a little story. I didn't see the point of it at the time. But tins of jam used to come up. The staple was plum and apple. But occasionally a tin would arrive with no label on it. That was sometimes strawberry. Of course, I didn't realize that all the strawberry jam had been pinched further back. But with the label having come off, they didn't know that. Our CO, Colonel Fairley, had a friend at Imbros, which was general headquarters throughout the campaign. And he sent him oranges and lemons once. I remember thinking how priceless this was. And of course we ordered our private supplies as far as one could. Tinned peaches and apricots and that sort of thing.
I suppose it was fresh fruit, was it, and vegetables that you were so short of?
Yes.
Apart from the oranges and lemons
That's
that
right.
arrived with the CO.
That's right.
Did you keep healthy, though? Did the men, you know, apart from going down with dysentery, was the sort of general state of health, what was it like, do you think?
Well, considering the conditions, my recollection is not too bad. So I say, there was this constant evacuation from sickness, dysentery or what have you. But, as I say, on the whole, it wasn't too bad considering the conditions.
Were there any rest areas? You know, were you given periods of respite from the trenches?
Well, the whole battalion was in reserve once. At least once. And that was at Chocolate Hill, which was behind Green Hill. I suppose you might call that a rest area. Yes, considering there was no stand to and no sentries. There were sentries, but I mean not sentries in the sense of having frontline sentries looking out. There was I remember during that period, somebody had the bright idea of running a canteen with comforts at Suvla Bay. We went down, and the first time, quite a lot of good things to be had. Chocolate and tin fish, tin fruit, and so on. Gradually, these faded away. Last time I went, there was nothing but bootlaces and herrings and tomato sauce. And when you're actually in the line, a company might be in reserve on Green Hill, or if your company was in the line, one platoon might be in reserve. But you could hardly describe that as a rest area.
Can you remember any form of entertainment that was put on at all by groups of troops?
No.
You didn't have concert parties or anything like that?
I used to try and run a concert party in Mesopotamia, but not at Suvla Bay. There was nowhere to have it, you see.
I wonder if you could give an idea what the terrain was like. Can you do any views of Gallipoli stick in your mind at all?
Well, yes. The ground was rocky, scrub. And the view towards the Turkish trenches, you could see the objectives that we'd had before, Scimitar Hill and the heights, which were so tragically not taken in time after the Suvla landing. And the sea on your right.
Any vegetation?
Not beyond scrub. May have been some tussocky grass, I can't really remember.
What sort of smells? You know, most countries have a smell, don't they?
Yes.
What would have been the all-pervasive smell there?
Well, do rocks have a smell? It's as near as I can get to it. I revisited Gallipoli 7 years later when my battalion was at Chinak on the other side. And that was in June, and everything was lush and green then, whereas the time I was there was from beginning of September until the evacuation. And I don't remember anything green then.
Was it quite hot in September still? Hmm? Was it quite hot in September?
Yes. It didn't start getting cool till October. It was pleasant in October.
Were you ever short of munitions or equipment? Vital equipment, you know, fighting equipment?
No, not that I can remember. There was always plenty of ammunition. I dare say from the Commander-in-Chief's point of view there wasn't enough. Just for a regimental officer in the trenches, we were never short.
Were there ever problems of military discipline that you can remember?
Yes. When I was on duty one night in the company, I found a sergeant asleep. That's an extraordinary serious offence. Because it's not only yourself that's endangered, it's your comrade. Well, not knowing enough about those things in those days, I didn't collect proper evidence. There wasn't enough evidence to go before a court-martial. So the CO just told him off. That's the only one I can remember. I can remember a comic one in Mesopotamia.
What was that?
Well, a rather hangdog-looking man. I was on a court-martial, field general court-martial. He was charged with striking a comrade, I think. So the president said, are you guilty or not guilty? Guilty, sir. God bless the Kaiser. Pray for the Kaiser every night. Guilty, sir. Afraid we can't entertain any disloyal sentiments of that kind, said the president. What he was after, of course, was a long term of imprisonment to get out of the war. What he got was field punishment number one.
What was field punishment number one?
Tied to a gun for certain periods.
Was that effective, do you think?
Yes.
Why was that? Why was it so effective, field punishment number one?
Well, because it was very unpleasant.
And humiliating as well.
Yes. Field punishment number two was simply doing extra fatigues and forfeiting your pay.
But did you find discipline generally good on the peninsula?
Yes.
As you said earlier, morale kept remarkably high.
Yes.
Did you have any contacts with home while you were there? Did you get letters and
parcels? Oh, yes. The mail was quite good. And I used to get cakes sent out, usually rather musty because it was sent in a tin, and biscuits. Oh, yes, I got regular letters from home.
What did you think of the Turks as fighting men, you know, from what you saw of them?
Good and honourable.
You obviously respected them.
Oh, yes. If it hadn't been for Mustafa Kemal, who was then a young divisional commander, we'd have easily succeeded. Two occasions, he inspired his troops at Seribir, Tanakbir, calling upon them again and again to attack when they were reluctant to, making them and stopping us getting control of that vital feature. As you know, Captain Allenson and some Gurkhas and a few of my regiment got to the top, looked at the narrows for a bit. And no reinforcements had to be given up. That was one occasion.